Good morning, and welcome to the Tuesday edition of The Morning Show with your hosts, Phil Huff, and with me once again in the studio, Julie Calamine.
Good morning, Phil.
How are you today, Julie?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm good, but you know, eventually the cold weather will catch up to the season, but it still feels to me like it's more November-ish than October-ish.
It's been a coolish fall, hasn't it? What's going on with the weather this week, Phil?
I don't know, but I wasn't planning on raking leaves or doing yard debris pickup for another month, and I feel like I might have to get it done before it really snows.
We got our last lawn mowing in.
Did you do anything? I hope. Is that what you did this weekend, or did you do anything fun?
Well, I did make a raised bed planter, Phil. Preparing for next spring, I am going to outwit the gophers in my yard at some point, and I think raised bed is the way to go.
Yeah, especially if you can put a little wire mesh down below it.
Did it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Excellent, excellent. Well, I stayed indoors preparing for next year and the year after by getting recertified in wilderness first aid.
Oh, good for you. That is on my to-do list, but I'm not signed up. I've got to get after that.
Yeah, you do. You should. It's a good skill to have for anyone to have. It's especially a good skill for your hiking companion to have.
Someone to save you.
We have a great show coming up. We have a couple guests today. We're going to get to them in a little bit, but we have Kyle Nagy from the University of Idaho College of Agriculture here to talk about the orchards at Sandpoint, and then later on in the hour, Mark Sauter is going to talk about stuff with EMS.
That's right.
But first, we're going to talk a little bit more in-depth about the weather. Today, we're going to hit a high of 58, which seems like a stretch from the 31 degrees when I left my house. Patchy fog. Tonight, we're going to slide back into the 30s, 39 degrees, mostly cloudy. Wednesday, partly sunny, a high of 62. And then Wednesday night, it looks like the rains are coming in. We've got a chance, 80% chance of rain on Wednesday night, and then the little icon that shows the weather for the rest of Thursday and Friday all just have shades of rain.
Well, it sounds like if you want to get out and enjoy the week, today and tomorrow are the days to do it.
I think so. I sure do.
But rain is good for certain things like orchards, apple orchards.
Yeah, and early fall frosts can and do interesting things for the fruit, and we're going to talk more about that. Why don't you give our guest a little bit more in-depth of an introduction.
All right, I'll do my best. It's a long title. I'd like to welcome Kyle Nagy. Good morning, Kyle.
Morning.
To the KRFY Morning Show, and here goes the title. Kyle, you are the University of Idaho College of Agriculture Superintendent and Orchard Operations Manager at the Sandpoint Organic Agricultural Center. That was a mouthful.
It is a mouthful.
That's a big title.
Yeah, yep. I've really been enjoying working for the university up here, though.
Very good. Well, Kyle, tell us just a little bit about your background, how you came to be here at the U of I up in the Panhandle.
Well, I'm originally from Wisconsin, went to school in Minneapolis, which is something that we have in common.
Yes, it is. Should we take a moment and just get that over with?
Yep, you got to have that Midwest love.
All right, we both graduated from the same place, the University of Minnesota College of Agriculture.
Yep.
And then we did.
And then you set your sights west on mountains.
That's right. Eventually, Kyle got here quite a bit earlier. Good for you, man.
Yeah, as soon as we got out of school, we headed west, had to get in the mountains.
Very good. All right. So graduated from the University of Minnesota, and then what happened?
Then we moved out this way, actually, to Missoula, where my sister was living at the time, and we kind of used her house as a base of operations, and were able to find some employment up in Sandpoint here, which is, if you can make it in Sandpoint, there's no reason to leave.
And so how long have you been here?
I've been here for going on 11 years now.
All right.
Yeah.
So you didn't start out at the U of I Organic Ag Center.
No, I started out working locally, doing some landscape and working at garden centers and that type of thing. And then I had the opportunity to come on and manage an orchard for a nonprofit called Center for Organic Studies.
Mm-hmm. So tell us about that, because I know that has something to do with the history of the Ag Center, doesn't it?
Yeah, yep. So the orchard was kind of a pet project of the nonprofit. They were just interested in growing some of these heirloom varieties that nobody's ever heard about, really. And then their hope was to really distribute those throughout the community to get some knowledge out there about these varieties and to hopefully get some of this fruit out in the market for people to sample.
And we're talking specifically here about varieties of apples.
Yes, yep. So we grow 68 different varieties of apples, along with a handful of pears, plums, and some cherries and raspberries as well.
I think that's one of the most fascinating things. As a consumer, you walk into the grocery store. Nowadays, you actually can choose from oftentimes up to maybe a dozen different varieties in the grocery aisles. But it used to be, I remember growing up, it was just, you know, delicious and maybe a Macintosh.
Yes, but before that, it was even many more. So there's sort of been a constriction, an expansion, a constriction, an expansion. It comes and goes with apples, doesn't it?
Yeah, it seems that way. So there were a lot of apples bred during colonial times in the United States. At that time, they weren't breeding them so much for fresh eating, but for hard cider production, because you couldn't really depend on your water to be very clean and safe for drinking. So even children at that time were drinking low alcohol hard cider because mm-hmm. it was safer than their water.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
It is. So how did, tell us a little bit more about the evolution of how societally, culturally, we've approached apples.
Yeah, so originally they were mostly used for cider, but then as we've kind of gotten better at breeding and we were looking at it as more of a fresh eating fruit, then we started looking more towards those types of flavors and profiles and texture is a big thing, of course.
And so I know this is pressing on everybody's mind, but the West at the time, we call it Midwest now, the Northwestern frontier opens up, commerce is speeding down the Ohio River. Johnny Appleseed, fact or fiction?
There's a lot of fact behind Johnny Appleseed, John Chapman, but he was just planting seeds, so he wasn't really grafting any specific varieties or anything. He was just trying to spread that genetic diversity out there, and then we have him to thank for a lot of the apples that we've been able to produce since then.
That's right. And apples do a lot of their own thing, don't they? They will cross-pollinate and hybridize like crazy.
Yeah, yep. So if you plant the seed out of an apple, you're going to get a tree that produces an apple, nothing like that apple that it came from. So if you're trying to get a specific variety, it's all done through grafting rather than seeds.
Unless you're maybe experimenting and wanting to make new apples.
Yeah, for sure. Breeding programs, they grow out thousands of seeds into fruiting trees so that they can see if that fruit's actually going to be worthwhile.
And so it's really interesting how it's evolved that way. It seems like it's more science than home gardening.
Yeah, there is a lot of good science behind it, but it's interesting, especially with all these heirloom varieties, how many homeowners and just enthusiasts there are around heritage apples.
Mm-hmm. And we know there's a lot of apple trees in the area. You can just drive down roads or walk alleyways in Sandpoint and see those, and there's an abundance of the crop at this time of year. Yet I think we live so close to Washington State, a neighbor of ours that is well known for their apples. How did Washington State, or maybe more broadly the Pacific Northwest, become such a home to the fruit?
Part of it is the climate. So one of the biggest things for the fruit industry, especially with apples, is low humidity helps with a lot of these varieties. There's some that grow well in Michigan and on the East Coast with higher humidity, but having the low humidity that we have out here really helps with a lot of fungal diseases mm-hmm. and that type of thing.
Well, I think we want to turn and talk really specifically about the center, but this might be a good point to take a short break. We often take a music break during the middle of the first interview. Today, we're going to do something a little different, a little earlier. We do have in our archives, these go back decades, a reading by the author of Robert Frost's After Apple Picking.
Excellent.
It seemed very appropriate. So we're going to see if we... He was tired.
So serious.
Well, I think it was, as all good poems are, about way more than just apple picking.
I should say but so.
If you're just tuning in, this is 88.5 KRFY, listener-supported community radio for North Idaho. And we're here this morning on the Tuesday morning show with Kyle Nagy from the University of Idaho's College of Agriculture. We're talking about the Organic Agricultural Center here in Sandpoint. And we're going to turn back to some questions about the history of the center, how it came to be about, more broadly what it's doing now, and where it's going in the future.
All right, take it away, Kyle. How did it come about that we the state were able to acquire this facility?
Yeah, so it was kind of a project that was together with the nonprofit Center for Organic Studies and the University of Idaho. We had been working together on some smaller projects locally here for the last couple of years. We had the pollinator and peril presentation that had an exhibit at the farmer's market, and we showed some videos over at the Panada, just really trying to get the information out there about the danger that our pollinators are really in out there. And then through that relationship, we continued to build, and we've hosted interns from the university for several years. And then it worked out that the university was able to acquire the property and the orchard and everything. And it's I like to say they sold me with the farm is kind of
how
it
worked out. Oh, you came along with the farm. Yeah. How nice.
Yeah. Yep. So I've been on the property for 8 years now, and it was just acquired by the university in August of last year.
So I think many people aren't familiar with the property. So give a description of where it is, how large it is, you know, what you experience if you go out to it.
Yeah, so we're located on North Boyer, about 3/4 of a mile or so north of the fairgrounds. We're hidden behind a big row of grand fir along Boyer there, right across from Schweitzer Mountain Road where the Red Barn is there. But the property is about 66 acres. We have plenty of implement sheds and that type of stuff. We have 8 acres right now in the certified organic orchard, as well as 8 acres for organic hay production. And then we're also transitioning maybe an additional 20 acres or so towards organic that should be there in 2 years from this fall.
Which is a unique distinction for property owned by the state of Idaho, University of Idaho. Tell us a little more about that.
So this is the first USDA certified organic farm that's part of the University of Idaho system, and that really opens up the possibility for a lot of USDA organic grants that require that all the research be completed on an organic farm.
And it's way more than, I don't want to say just an apple orchard, but it's a beautiful conference center. The teaching facilities are superb.
Yeah, yep. We have a great big conference center, as well as a bunkhouse that can sleep around 30 people or so. It's been a great asset for the university. We actually have a plant science class coming up this week that's going to be staying overnight and doing some projects out in the orchard. So it's really an asset for a lot of classes that are bringing field trips up here. But then also I'm really excited for the prospects for organic research up in the area.
It's a wonderful opportunity for the university.
Yeah, yeah, it really is.
Yeah, students, everybody. It's great.
Yep, and we're hoping to get the word out to prospective students who are interested in organics that weren't quite sure where they wanted to go. But with this blossoming program at the University of Idaho, we're really hoping to attract some interested people.
And we will be talking about blossoming apples a bit more. But before I get there or get back to there, there's another thing that happened this year, and that was a native plant installation.
Yeah, so we had Dr. Stephen Love down on campus. He grew a bunch of these natives from seed down in the campus greenhouses, and then they were brought up this summer and transplanted. And what we're working on is demonstration trials, so we can see what of these native plants really have some value for landscaping. And right now, they're just planted out in trials, but we're hoping to do some beds to show you how you could utilize these in a landscape.
So lots of goals. I hear research goals and experimentation. Are there primary goals that the university had when they acquired this property?
I think the first and foremost goal was to really increase the university's presence in North Idaho. Mm-hmm. Since the old R&E station closed on Boyer, there hasn't been a whole lot of university activity up here. And we wanted to change that. So that's really what we're working towards. And using the facility, our big conference center, we're starting to host classes for the master gardeners, master foresters, master naturalists. We got 4-H groups coming in, all kinds of great groups using the facilities.
And beyond the master's programs, which are a bit misleading in that many people come to that without that master's experience, so they're really broadly available to a wide swath of the public. There are other public offerings or programs coming up?
We've also hosted the first annual Heritage Orchard Conference this year. We put that on in, I believe it was late May, and we're already talking about a second conference that we're hoping to hold the fall of 2020. So we moved it from spring to fall so everybody can bring their apples and we can all compare and taste and have some cider as well.
And harvest season must bring about a flurry of activity, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. And this year, our harvest was actually cut short because of these hard frosts we've been having. Apples can survive a frost to around 28 degrees or so, but once they get much colder than that, the water in the actual cells starts to freeze and crystallize and breaks the cell walls down, and then they don't store very well. So when we had that, must have been maybe 2 Mondays ago, we had that really hard frost that night. We were out in the orchard from sunup till sundown picking as many apples as we could to get them out of there.
Sounds like it probably took an army of volunteers or students.
We have three part-time harvesters working over there this fall, and they've been a great help.
Were you able to harvest the apples you needed to, or were there some losses?
There were probably, I'd say we got to 95% of them. There's still a few apples out there, but I'm hoping that we can pick those and go straight into cider.
So I'm picturing 6 to 8 acres of apples coming off trees pretty much all at once. What do you do with the abundance of fruit?
Well, that's part of it is with all these interesting varieties, they don't all come off at once. We have a really long harvest compared to most conventional orchards that are growing just a few varieties. Our earliest apple is harvested usually by the middle of August, and then if the weather cooperates, we can be harvesting apples all the way till Halloween. It's a long harvest.
One advantage of planting a variety of species is that you can spread the work out over a bit of time.
Yeah, definitely. And you get all types of different apples from those early soft apples to those late storage apples.
So do you keep the test kitchen busy baking pies or donate them to the food bank or sell them to support the operation? What happens with the apples?
So we haven't got into making any pies yet, but we do sell our produce around Sandpoint. Our production isn't really high right now. But we have apples in Yokes and Winter Ridge right now, and the plan is to start pressing cider, I believe, next week. So we'll have that going out into the store shortly as well.
And can a resident come to the research facility and purchase apples, or do they need to go to the grocery store?
So we do bulk purchases through the orchard. So if somebody's looking for 20 pounds or more, if they're looking to dry some apples or make some sauce or some cider, we'll do larger purchases straight from the orchard.
This leads me into the slightly larger question. Purchasing apples bulk or otherwise from this facility and all the interesting varieties is a big benefit to the community. How else do you see this facility benefiting the community?
Well, we've already had the opportunity to host a lot of events for nonprofits and other educational institutions in the area. We've hosted a few for the Waldorf School. They actually had their 8th grade graduation out there this spring. So that was great to have so much life in the building.
Mm-hmm. And for those who are listening that might be interested, the facility is available for rent for organizations that want to hold a meeting there.
Yeah, yep. We're not holding any private events, but nonprofits and educational mm-hmm. stuff, we're happy to host mm-hmm. that stuff.
I want to talk a little more about the experience going into the grocery store and selecting an apple. We know that we see the fruit year-round. We also know that there's a fairly narrow range of harvest time in the fall. And yet through the miracles of storage, modern technology, we can assume we're getting a relatively fresh apple even in February, March, April. But we can also sometimes go in, it seems like, in September or October and get a really mushy, mealy one. How can we tell what we're getting?
It's really hard to tell how fresh an apple really is these days with controlled atmosphere storage. So what they're actually doing is in these apple storages, they'll actually pick the apples quite a bit early so they don't mature too fast. And then they'll keep them in the controlled atmosphere, which is they pump out the oxygen and pump in the nitrogen. And that slows the aging process. So apples in controlled atmosphere can store for up to, I think, 2 years or so.
And do we have any way of telling? Is there any date, best buy date or anything on the grocery store apples?
Yeah, the apples don't come with a sticker of Best Buy or anything like that. So it's really difficult to tell if your apple is from this fall or if it was from last fall or even 2 falls ago. So
unless you go to an orchard.
There you go. Yeah, that's the best way to ensure it.
Go in the fall to one of the local outlets for the product from the U of I and you know you're getting it fresh.
Yep. Yes. You're not doing any nitrogen storage?
No, we try to, since our production isn't really high and we're not trying to store for a long time, we're actually, instead of trying to pick them early, we're trying to pick our apples at peak ripeness. Mm-hmm. We want those apples as good as we can get them, and then we try to get them out into the markets as fast as we can.
How do you make that determination?
Well, we usually do it kind of by committee, and it's a taste committee. So we go around and we pick some apples, and we all sample them, and we decide whether or not that variety's ready.
So, I want that job.
So it's a good reminder always to shop local, support your local farmer or orchardist, your local farmers market, CSA, people who are growing things locally. We know the source, we know the origin, we know a little bit more about the nurturing that went into it. And yet so many of the products we get in the grocery store don't necessarily come locally. So if you do have a good grocer that's buying locally, that's another indicator. I have a question. And from a recent trip to the Cascades in Washington, we're driving by some large apple orchards, and I noticed that they were training or trailing their trees to more resemble a grapevine. They weren't growing them in the traditional straight stem and branch. And I don't, there's probably a technical word for it, but I think that's the best visual description for someone who may or may not have seen it. Is that where the state of the technology or artistry is going?
Yeah, in conventional, large conventional orchards, they're definitely moving towards a trellis system, and that's for high density. Our orchard, we're on a semi-dwarf rootstock, so we're planting our trees in the around 20 feet apart or so. And that gives them plenty of room to spread out and get those limbs out there and with all the apples on them. But in a conventional orchard, what they're looking to do is plant as many apples as they can in a small amount of space. So their rows are actually planted with an apple tree every about 3 feet,
yeah,
which is extremely dense. And then that's on a dwarfing rootstock, so the trellis helps to support that tree that might not be able to support itself without the trellis.
And I suppose that would aid in mechanized apple picking.
Exactly. That's the new thing. They're working on actual machines that are going to go along and pick the apples based on color and that type of thing. So that's going to be the next big thing.
It is amazing, and you know, I think we all are thankful for some of these progresses and then feel just uneasy about others, and very much more comfortable knowing that there's a full-time orchardist on duty who's been there for years tending the crops. But what do you do in the winter? What does winter months bring for you?
Most of our winters are used for planning the rest of the year. So there's always something to do out there between events that we have going on. We've had some groups come in and use the facilities and the bunkhouse throughout the winter. And then we're also hoping to put on more educational events through the university. The Master Gardeners spring program usually starts up late winter, so we get a group in there pretty consistently. And then the forestry folks start coming in. So there's always some type of event going on out there.
I can just imagine it's such a beautiful facility. Who wouldn't want to use it? I haven't asked you about this, and I don't know if the U of I works with partners. You mentioned we're the original owner of the orchard, and now it's the University of Idaho. Are there partners that help with this? Any nonprofits, any volunteers that come to you from other organizations?
At this point, we haven't had a whole lot of volunteer opportunities, but I'm sure thinking we will in the future here. It's mostly been through people that are also interested in heritage apple varieties. We have a great community over in eastern Washington. There's David Benscotter, who's kind of known as the apple detective, and what he's actually doing is visiting these old homesteads in the Steptoe Butte area, and identifying or attempting to identify a lot of these varieties that are on these old homesteads. Some of the varieties he's found, they thought were completely lost. So really some interesting work to be done.
They might end up at the U of I Organic Center. Wouldn't that be neat?
Do you have plans to expand into more varieties?
At this point, we don't have plans to expand for varieties, but I've been talking with some of the folks down in at the Parma Research Station, which is a big pomology station for the university, and there's definitely interested in some breeding trials with all the varieties that we have up here. There's so much genetic diversification that that we can really have. We could have the next Honeycrisp out here.
Tell us about what that means.
So the Honeycrisp specifically is kind of been the king of the apples, I'd say, for the last decade or so.
And where did it come from, by the way?
Of course, it came from the University of Minnesota.
and weren't you kind of around when that was happening?
Yeah, it was nice. I actually, for some of my classes, I got to interview Jim Luby, who was in charge of the apple breeding program that came up with the Honeycrisp. So that was part of what sparked my interest in
apples.
And
probably everyone listening to this by now knows the superb taste of a Honeycrisp, but sometimes it's an ugly fruit because it doesn't store or travel as well.
Yeah, yep. The Honeycrisp, like most varieties, it has its own problems. Specifically, the Honeycrisp is prone to bitter pit, which is actually a calcium deficiency. So if you're growing a Honeycrisp in your yard and you see that it's starting to get some dark spots on the apples after you pick them and you're trying to store them, what you might need to do is some foliar applications of calcium throughout the growing season.
Mm-hmm. Now, we have a note here that you have an upcoming public tasting.
Yeah, so this is going to be the first public apple tasting at the Sandpoint Organic Agriculture Center. It's going to be on Saturday, October 26th. And we're planning to have it open from around 1 o'clock to 4 o'clock so people can wander in and out as they have time. And we're going to be tasting hopefully 30-plus apples, and we'll have some of our cider there for sampling as well. So all kinds of good varieties to try.
We digressed from research for a moment to talk about the tasting and Honeycrisps, but is there going to be, obviously there's going to be research at the U of I Center, and what sort of research will you be focusing on?
So we don't have a main focus at this point. A lot of it's going to be determined by graduate students and researchers and their areas of interest. We've had a graduate student named Courtney Cosden. She's had a project up at the university's property up here for the last two summers that was evaluating soil tests.
So the public tasting, you mentioned cider.
Yes.
This year's cider?
Yes. Yep. We're going to probably be pressing next Wednesday is my thought. So we'll have some very fresh cider ready for the public apple tasting.
And if folks want more information or want a reminder or want to share that information, is there a website or phone number that they can call or go to?
So there's definitely our website on the university's page. That has a list of all of the varieties that we grow out there and everything. But we should be putting out some more information about the tasting here coming up shortly.
Okay, great.
And I stepped out for just a moment, and I may have missed this, but will there be tastings of apple varieties plus the cider?
Yeah, yep, we should be tasting, I'm thinking, at least 30 different types of apples.
Oh, my goodness.
And our cider as well.
So come hungry.
Yes. You won't need to eat for the rest of the day.
Is there a fee for the tasting?
Nope, just open to the public. Come whenever you have time, and you'll be able to see what we have out here, some interesting stuff.
I like the idea of, will the apple sleuth be there? If someone has a apple tree in their backyard and they inherited the property or bought recently, they don't know what it is, can they bring it to someone and say, look at this apple, tell me what it is?
It's really difficult to identify an apple just by looking at it. Since colonial times in the United States, there's been over 5,000 name varieties, so it gets really tough to identify one just by look. But there are starting to be institutions that are doing genetic testing on them for a real positive identification.
Can you get an idea, though, from like looking at the leaf and the fruit, or is it really just almost impossible?
It's really difficult. Somebody who really knows what they're doing, I'm sure, could, but you're looking at the shape and size of the apple, the cross-section, the leaves on the tree, the flowers. It's a lot really goes into
it. Does it help to cut it open and taste it?
Oh, that always helps.
Okay. So bring at least two apples.
There you go. Yeah.
So we can have a little round robin, a panel of experts having a nibble on each.
But don't expect to get an answer. And Kyle, it's time for a disclosure. We met Kyle. Both Phil and I met Kyle a couple of weeks ago at a Native Plant Society presentation, and he was talking about the orchard, and we were having a smaller apple tasting, and a discussion or a question came up about the genetic testing of apple varieties, and it's getting less expensive, but it's still fairly expensive.
Yeah, I know when I looked at it years ago, I think it was over $1,000 to identify a variety, so... it's come down quite a bit from there. I think it's closer to like $150 or $200, which is still
kind of expensive.
Yeah, yep. Yes. So I'm hoping that cost just continues to come down.
It's cheaper just to make up a name for your backyard tree.
There you go.
Or maybe buy a new young apple and know what you've got. Who knows?
We're going to take a short music break, and when we come back, we'll probably talk a little bit more about apples and then a little bit about EMS. But bottom of the hour here, a reminder that this is 88.5 KRFY Pend Oreille. listener-supported community radio for all of North Idaho. We're here this morning talking with Kyle Nagy from the University of Idaho College of Agricultural He's the superintendent and orchard operations manager at the Sandpoint Organic Agricultural Center. We're going to bust a lot of myths. No such thing as Dr. Zeus? Oh, come on.
I know. And green apples? No, we want ripe apples.
So if God didn't pick them, well, we know who did. Kyle did.
That would be Kyle Nagy from the University of Idaho.
And his minions. We're back talking apples. If you missed any of the first part of the interview, you can always check it out later on a podcast. We'll put up on our website at krfy.org. And we're back to talk more about apples. We've had a few questions come in via the text.
Yes, we did. This must be a very popular and interesting topic because we have texts coming in. And one reads, can you please ask the apple dude about winter regimens in the orchard? All right, apple dude, or AKA Kyle Nagy.
I think I like apple dude better.
And a raise should come with a new title every time.
Yeah, well, going into winter, one of our big things is trying to protect those trees, first of all, from the rodents, the voles. Young fruit trees, the voles are the ones that leave all those beautiful trails in your lawn every spring.
Oh, yes.
But over the winter when there's not much for them to eat, they want to find these young fruit trees, and they'll chew the bark around the base of those trees, which is nice and tender. But the problem is then in the spring, we don't have that conductive tissue to move moisture and nutrients throughout the tree. So
Girdle them, basically.
Exactly, yep.
So speaking of warding off potential damage to trees, what do you do about deer and moose?
Just a big fence. That's about all you can do with the deer and the moose. And we definitely have them in our area, and I've seen moose and elk walking along our fence looking very hungry.
That is part of a winter regimen, but how do you try and control voles and gophers, those little critters? It's difficult in an orchard.
Yeah, especially being certified organic, we're not doing any poisoning or baiting or anything like that. So most of what we're trying to do is our cultural practices. So we wrap the bases of our trees in a hardware cloth, which is that fine galvanized mesh. And that makes it so the voles can't get in there and chew on that bark there.
Have you thought about adopting some cats from the shelter?
That would be something. I don't know if they'd let us rent 30 cats for a few weeks.
Well, I think if you had a nice warm barn, they could retreat back into. It could be a beneficial thing for everyone.
Yeah.
Maybe we should put them in touch with the Pondere Panhandle Animal Shelter.
Yeah, sometime we'll have
there's a partnership.
Mandy on as well. But
there we go. Perfect.
And are gophers as big of a problem as the voles?
Yeah, so the gophers are doing a different type of damage. They're doing all of their damage below ground, where they're eating a lot of the fibrous roots that do all the absorption of the moisture and nutrients. But that's another one that we're strictly using trapping to try and eliminate those guys.
I hate those little guys, I have to admit it. And then another question, Kyle, came from another listener wanting to know how you work with the pollinators in your apple orchards to make sure everything's properly pollinated.
So we do end up having some honeybee hives brought in, which is really nice because they come in boxes of 80,000 bees, so they can really visit a lot of flowers throughout the day. But we also try to encourage native pollinators by planting ground covers that are going to encourage beneficials to stick around.
Clovers, what are they? What are beneficials?
Yeah, so it's a lot of clover, legume mixes, vetch, that type of thing, because we're also getting some nitrogen fixation from that
so
as well.
The pollinators, because it sounded like the way to produce a specific variety is through the grafting. Do the pollinators mess up some of the plants?
Nope, the pollination doesn't affect any varieties or the apple flavor or anything. That's all down to the grafting, the variety that the tree is.
Now, the offspring could be different, but the apples
Correct.
Keep making the same apples.
Yep, you would have to plant out every seed in that apple to see if there's a good one
so
in
that,
there.
So that apple that we call Honeycrisp or Red Delicious or Gala or whatever contains within it the potential seeds for almost anything. It's a mystery.
Yes, yeah, it really is. It's pretty incredible. But you can definitely focus your breeding trials if you want to try a mix of the Honeycrisp with, say, the Northern Spy or something, because you're trying to get the crispness of the Honeycrisp, but some of the sweetness of the Northern Spy. So there's definitely some direction you can give your breeding, but those seeds are going to be a little bit of everything.
So we have another text question from a listener. Tours. Do you have public tours available?
So we don't have public hours open right now, but we do set up tours for groups that are interested in coming out and visiting the facilities, especially for nonprofits and educational groups, that kind of thing.
What's the best way for them to reach you to schedule something like that?
The best thing would probably be to email me, or you can also get a hold of us through Facebook, through the Sandpoint Organic Agriculture
Center. So it's an opportunity to remind listeners, too, that there are a variety of organizations you mentioned earlier who have come out, the Native Plant Society, the Master Gardeners, the Master Naturalists, and these are the kinds of organizations that might have a tour and are worthwhile supporting on their own, but becoming a member of and supporting those organizations helps to build the community that encourages tours and interactions.
That's right. And, you know, you mentioned the facility for interns. Will that be growing? How many interns might you expect in the future?
So in the past, we've either had one or two interns, but there's definitely enough room and enough projects out at the Ag Center that we could definitely hold more interns up here.
Now, we have not talked about raspberries yet. However, they're there. We know.
Yes, this was actually the first summer that we opened up our raspberries for UPIC, which was a great opportunity to get the community out there and let them know that we are out here, because we are kind of hidden up here.
Is that a target of opportunity, or is there something symbiotic between the raspberries and the apples that's like a companion type thing?
It's mostly just we're doing some trials with different varieties of raspberries, and this was a few of the varieties that we really enjoyed out of those trials. So we planted those out. I think we have around 1,000 feet of rows right now. So there's a lot of raspberries to be picked in season.
And how many varieties?
We have two varieties right now. It's the Boyne, which is a summer red raspberry, which is great for preserves and fresh eating. And then we also have a fall gold, which is a yellow raspberry, which is a very sweet raspberry.
Not familiar with the yellow raspberry.
They're pretty and delicious. Yeah. I've had them. Well, Kyle, as we're coming to the end of our hour of the KRFY morning show, anything else you'd like to share? Anything fun stories?
Man, it's always great when we have groups out from Sandpoint High School. We have John Hastings is bringing a class out for us every fall and sometimes in the spring as well. So it's great to have those young people out there and really get them interested and let them know that there's the possibility for this in the future. And that's one of the big things is we want to attract students that are really interested in organic agriculture and sustainable agriculture.
Mm-hmm. By that, do you mean elementary, high school, all the youngsters?
Yeah, it's just good to get that out there for everyone, but we're really hoping to attract some students coming out of high school, possibly coming to the University of Idaho, and let them know that the sustainable food systems program is growing and that there's going to be a lot of opportunities for internships and research that's really going to be applicable.
Mm-hmm. When do you foresee a four-year program in apples, a master's of apple?
That would be interesting. I'm not sure that that's in the works right now, but if we continue in the direction we're going, it's definitely a possibility.
Well, it would certainly be the spot for a PhD of apples with an organic research facility, so maybe you'll skip the master's and move on to PhD projects.
There you go. That would be great.
It does open the general question, and it's a fairly new facility. We've talked about a lot of things going on and some visions for the future. How do you plan for the future? What's the process? I'm sure the plans aren't complete.
Yeah, yep. So we're still developing a master plan with the College of Ag admin down on campus, but everyone is that visits the facility from campus is really excited about the facilities and all the opportunities for organic research up at the Sandpoint Organic Ag Center.
Exciting.
It is.
I loved the facility. I loved hearing everything that you've got going on there. Huge job for you, Kyle Nagy.
Well, thank you for coming on the show. If there's ever anything new and breaking in the apple world, we're here to help cover it. So
I'll be sure to let you know. Yeah.
And at least taste it. Yeah,
at least taste it.
It sounds like a seasonal thing. If there's something happening in the spring with regards to upcoming either events or volunteer activities, let us know and we'll have you back on.
Yeah, definitely. Maybe we can do some tours of our bloom during the spring, which is always
a KRFY tour.
There we go.
Apple Blossom Tour with KRFY.
Set it up.
Well, thank you for coming in, Kyle. As always, we appreciate your time, and our listeners who may have missed part of this can tune into the podcast at krfy.org. We appreciate you coming in this morning, Kyle.
Thanks for having me.
We're going to take a short music break here, and it looks like we're going to defer EMS to another day. But right now we are going to play a song we had queued up for it, the shooting.